can't stop us now.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. My name is William Whitecrow, and welcome to Sovereign Minds. And our special guest tonight is Joe Dozell, of the Pyramid Center. And tonight we are going to talk about building a new type of society and city, believe it or not. He's really got a good project going here. We've talked for quite a while about it, and believe me, I asked him questions of many different aspects about it, and he was on the money. This society is one that works without taxes, political agendas, and things. It's basically a city, a society run by the people, and alternative fuel methods and stuff like this. But first, let's take a look at some news threads here. Number one, Egypt is going crazy right now, having riots and everything. You've probably seen that on the news everywhere, demanding that their president step down and lead the political process altogether. Both Muslim, which is really interesting here, as both Muslim and Christians are actually seem to be working together in many areas, protecting their neighborhoods, the stores and everything in their particular areas. Unemployment, they say, is at that country is at 9.7%, but statistics show that it's a lot more than that.
Right, and it's kind of funny Obama's supporting the president.
Yeah, that's
why are our presidents always supporting the bad guys?
Well, that's a good question there, Dave, because it's very true. And every single incident's going on overseas right now, that is the case. You know, also, a Los Angeles police officer has been arrested for false allegations that he was shot during his patrol near a high school on his beat. Now, the only thing that he could have done, and what they have found out, that basically his weapon misfired, he might have shot himself, it's hard to say. I haven't got all the information, but he was lying. And we're finding out that a lot of officers in different areas are finally being put in check. You know, they're getting way out of line there, but that doesn't mean we don't have some good ones. Number three, Southern Sudan has voted to secede from their union. Sounds like something some of the people in the United States want to do, some of the states, you know, from the feds. That's 99% of the voters have voted for this to happen.
That's good. I mean, people need to they need to really exercise our rights that we have, not be afraid. Everyone, oh, seceding, oh, that's terrible. No, it's not terrible. That's a, you know, we are
but you're right.
A state. That means we are a country. We're our own country, and we can be our own country. We choose to be part of the United States.
That's right. That's right.
And we can choose to get away from them if we want to.
That's right. And a lot of states can look at that. This is very, very important. You know, we do have the right to vote. Our grandfathers even put that in. For those of you who want to call in during the show, the number is 530-605-4567. Okay, and with those are our news threads for tonight. And now, ladies and gentlemen, as you know, we have had a new sponsor here, Advanced Soil Stabilization, using Technisoil for dust control on roads, driveways, and parking lots. Also, they install Crestone driveways. If you want to know more about this, call Todd Sykes for more information at 530-549-4801. I'm going to repeat that number again, 530-549-4801. That's an Advanced Soil is green friendly, ladies and gentlemen, meaning it's not going to pollute a lot of what you have around your house. It also eliminates dust in a big way. Like I've said, I have to back this company up. I've had this done on my property before, not particularly through this company, but it works, and it really works well. Okay, another special thanks also to all of the other sponsors, those who had, and also those who have donated to the cause of Foreign Minds Radio, and thank you from each and every one of us here at the Sovereign Minds crew for your support and help. It's much appreciated and keeps us going in a big way.
Yeah, thanks. I'm broke. Yeah. We need this.
There you go. From the mouth of Nate. Very true. Okay, also, like I said, during the shows, if you'd like to call in at 530-605-4567. Now, our special guest tonight is Joe, and he's designed and is now in the process of creating a complex that is called the Pyramid Center. It's actually a city of the future, I believe, and I really feel this. This would be better off for us all the way around. And believe it or not, it's ran by the people for the people. I think that's something that's been forgotten in our society. You know.
Well, a couple weeks ago, I kind of didn't know what a charter city was. Well, I looked it up. You know, so it's kind of a similar thing, yeah. Run by the people,
mm-hmm.
and we make our own laws. I mean, that's how it should be, and I think that's what the founding fathers intended.
Oh yeah, that's exactly what they intended. You're right, 100%. And what's really interesting about this, well, I I plugged him on the education, you know, on the geopolitical aspects of it, on the law enforcement aspect of it, and he came up with the right answers. So, Joe, are you out? You out there right now?
I am out here. How you doing, Mike Crow?
Hey, I'm doing real good. It's good to talk to you again and everything. My first question is, what started you on your journey for this Pyramid Center?
Well, it started many years ago, about 7-8 years ago, and I was just inspired, ironically, by the pyramid itself, by the actual geometric structure of the pyramid, and, you know, going through a lot of historical anecdotes about the pyramids and where they came from and what purpose they actually served, what it means metaphorically, then it ironically started leading into a lot of socio-political ideas, psychological ideas, metaphorical ideas, spiritual ideas, and it all kind of tied in together into really being not necessarily just a social situation, a small community situation, but rather an entire way of life, an entire way of living, a new paradigm, if you will.
Uh-huh. I understand. Yeah, I lived on the Indian reservation for quite a few years of my life, so I lived a tribal existence for quite a while, and that really seems along the lines of what you're doing here, you know, more clan, more tribal in a sense, from what we were talking before. But what are the political ramifications of doing something like you're doing?
Well, you know, I think in terms of the politics, you know, we've gotten to a situation here in America where the representatives can't possibly know the intention or what's good even for the average person anymore. And it's really something more, they're just getting their pockets better. And this is something that's been known for a very long time. But, you know, the people, they can't do anything about it for the most part because it's just such an intense bureaucratic suppression that the average person just doesn't have the means, the resources to do anything about it. And so my approach was kind of in summation what Gandhi said, you know, the best thing you can do is be the example of the change you wish to see.
That's right.
And so as a result, I think the last thing that you want to do is have some kind of a violent uprising, some kind of a revolution like what they're doing in Egypt. It might be good for the short run, but in the long run, you're not going to achieve anything. If anything, you know, some tyrannical despot is going to rise again and suppress the people more than is currently happening there. And so I think that the revolution has to happen in the individual, in a spiritual sense, in the sense of inspiration, where they actually want to become something better spiritually and then live that example rather than just being sheer preachers like we see in the majority of the world today.
I understand. You're breaking up there just a little bit. Are you on a handheld phone? Or?
I'm on a cell phone, actually.
Oh, okay, gotcha. It sounded like you were walking around or something there. Now, one thing, where is this Pyramid Center being at right now? What's where you at?
We got 237 acres in the San Bernardino Mountains, which is, for those of people who are familiar with the area, it's actually up the 330 highway going towards Big Bear. And you break off about halfway, and you go down a dirt road for 15 miles, and then we're out there literally in the middle of nowhere in the mountains. Absolutely a gorgeous view for those of the people who go on the website can see a lot of images and pictures that were taken from that center. And for those that aren't familiar with the area, it's essentially in Southern California, 60 miles east of Los Angeles.
Okay, can you mentioned a website. Can you give that to the people?
Yes, it's thepyramidcenter.org. That's one word, thepyramidcenter.org.
Okay. Very good there. Now, we were talking about, let's touch on the law enforcement aspect of this when we were talking earlier and everything. I understand the clan aspect and the tribal aspect of everything that's going on there. We're in this center, in this this creation of this, and I have to look at it as a community, 100% there. Where would law enforcement be at this, with this center?
Well, you know, and in answering that question, we first have to understand what is, you know, what the purpose of law enforcement is. That is to enforce the law, which generally we don't want to break. And so my approach to that situation is something like figuring out what the cause of disobedient people is, or disobediency or unlawfulness is. And like we've discussed before, you know, a lot of the causes for, let's say, rape or theft or drug dealing or prostitution or any of these vices that we see in modern society is really a result of socioeconomic disadvantages. Mm-hmm. And so, again, you know, in order to either mitigate law enforcement or correct the problem to begin with, I think the social structure has to be set in place. And if we don't have these socioeconomic distinctions or differentiations between the people, and the main, I guess if you will, virtue or the main asset to be appraised for in the society is wisdom or knowledge, mm-hmm. then, you know, the law enforcement will be basically that as it was, let's say, 100 years ago when somebody would do something immoral, then, you know, people themselves would actually keep the society in check and the elders would keep things in check, but there would really be almost no necessity or no desire to go to become taboo or to go outside the box because the aspirations of that society would be much more different than we have in our current situation.
Yeah, I understand. That's very good, and I agree with you. When I was living on the res, as we say, if something happened, we took care of it. We didn't have to have the sheriff or police or anybody come down. Everybody knew who the thieves were or whatever, and they were pretty much expelled from the society, or they were watched very closely. Now, one thing that I want to ask you about, we just want you to kind of go over the whole program and what you have planned, what is happening, how the society would be set up and everything.
Well, like I said, currently we have about 230 acres up there, which we've been developing over the last 5 years. I've actually put over $200,000 of my own money into it, and I've built roads up there. I actually have already a prototype is what I'm going to have as bungalow situated in the beginnings of it where people can actually stay bungalows. Essentially what I've done is I've completely renovated mobile office units, but I've just did a beautiful, luxurious mobile office units where they're really mosaic tiles, no bathtubs, and so you're kind of up there with solar panels, clean water, everything is self-sufficient, everything is very modern, so we're not going back to the Stone Ages, you know, because a lot of people, unfortunately, as good as it sounds, wouldn't necessarily agree with that. So it's going to be very modern in the context in that respect, but it's also going to be self-sufficient. So you can have your own water, you can have your own power, so there'll be no need for the struggle. And so that's kind of one of the aspects. That's the aspect that is being developed right now. But as the name indicates, the Pyramid Center, then we will have a pyramid on site, which will actually be used to facilitate mental, physical ailment rectification, also for healing, for chants, for mantras, for any kind of prayer, because, you know, the pyramid does have sacred healing energies. And then another interesting property that we will have with the pyramid is the fact that it will actually be used as our water reservoir underneath, where the water will actually be held. So a lot of the water that will be used throughout the entire center will be charged with pyramid energy.
Hey, Joe. Sorry, this is Nate. Welcome. Thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, Nate. How you doing?
Pretty good. So are you going to be offering packages to, you know, people come up there for a week if they want, or 2 weeks, or are you going to be offering, you know, what are you going to be offering? Is it just...
Well, what I want to essentially offer when it will be complete, that's what I'm hoping to have in the next year.
You're breaking up.
I want to disadvantage people who are socioeconomically under, and so if somebody wants to come up and just relax and enjoy the day up there, they can do that for free, but if they want to get some kind of treatment or service via the actual pyramid itself, or get maybe one of the masters, it'll be donation primarily, but we will have charge for certain services, like if they wanted to stay in the bungalows for, you know, a day or a week. And in this entire process, people can either just relax and they can do their own thing, walk around. Remember, we're on a very big plot of land, so it's not like they'll be confined to, you know, a block. They could read books, they can meditate if they want. There will be courses there where people can actually speak to specific elders that will live on site actually and talk about various spiritual subjects, whether they want to talk about yoga sutras, kundalini yoga, or even Native American tribal rituals and the like. So in terms of what we'll offer, it'll be predominantly along that aspect.
Well, that's good. I'm a shaman myself, as you know, and when we met down there and I was giving my talk at Conspiracy Con 10 with Brian Hall, the producer down there and everything, I had a chance to deal with a lot of these computer companies and everything when I was given the visualization, the guided visualization on the front lawn out there. And that is what I see happening in the world today. A lot of people are becoming unbalanced. I mean, we're worried about what's going on with our financial systems. We're worried about medical, this and that. It really seems like this matrix that is out there is really keeping us away from being balanced. And what you're doing here is allowing people to take the time and get rebalanced. That's what the society is all about, it seems like.
Exactly, and that's the intention. What I essentially want to give people is that sense of inspiration to kind of seek that inner light in themselves. Because that's exactly, you know, our society, whether you're rich or poor, black or white, good or bad, then that's one thing that particularly our society lacks is any sense of looking within, any type of introspection, because everything's so focused on the external, you know, the job, the social status, you know, the money, this and that. Nobody really ever bothers even looking at anything internally. You know, we have our religions, of course, but, you know, unless you understand the allegorical significance of Catholicism or Judaism or any of these, then, you know, you're definitely not getting any wealth of information. You're just getting allegories, but you might as well just read stories, you know.
Right. I agree.
So that, you know, so that is what I want to give, is people that sense of looking within, and that internal, the beauty or the inspiration, that aspiration within, that everybody does have the divine spark in them, and to recognize that and then follow whatever it is that they're going to do in.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's very important, you know. With all the craziness in the world, you know, food shortages all in many other countries, something definitely is going to happen here in the United States. And I really think that people are going to lean more towards your type of society that you're talking about right here. This is really, as I see it, a future community that we really need to look into. What type of situation would be for, shall we say, we have mayors in towns and things, and then you have the DA and all this, and we had talked about the law enforcement aspect one time. What would be the governing factor? I know the people would be, as we talked, but would it be a council? Would it be an individual? Or
right, it would be exactly the way you talked about when you grew up on the reservations. There's generally a council of elders that'll make the decision, maybe an odd number of council, because you don't want an even tiebreak, as they say, something like an elderly council of 7 or 13. And again, you know, I think what's key here to understand is what is the core value of that community or the society? Because ours is material wealth. So as a result, the byproduct of that is socioeconomic discrepancies, which breeds crime, essentially, theft, like we've said, you know, drug dealing and this and this and that. So if the core value of that society is, then we'll mitigate a lot of those problems to begin with. But when problems do come, because of course they will, you know, we have to be realistic, then that a council of elders would rectify the situations according to the wisdoms and the rituals which are pertinent and accepted in that particular society.
Mm-hmm. Now, most of the power and everything, as you mentioned before, you're going to be producing yourself. That's wind and solar and things of that nature?
Prominently solar, and that's ideal here for Southern California. You know, if you're in Washington or in Oregon, you might want to go with wind. I currently have an 850 kilowatt system powering just one of the bungalows, which are completely finished, and that's completely solar, but I do plan on running that wind power also, though maybe a little kilowatt wind generator, just, you know, sometimes we have rain here for a week, but mostly it's not. So.
Yeah, you know, we just had one of the people in the chat room talk about what's the difference between what you're talking about in a commune. I think a lot of people got ideas like in the 1960s and stuff, they had a commune, the free love and all this. This is not what you're talking about here. This is a viable community, I feel.
It is a viable community. And, you know, in a lot of things, and this is the unfortunate aspect of what a lot of in the Western world, when we talk about communes and free love and free spirit, it's good, but, I mean, just from my experience on it, it's very... there's no, you know, people just get together and they, you know, they like to do drugs and kind of escape reality. What we're doing is not trying to escape reality, but rather just have a more balanced way of life altogether. So like I said, you know, the objective isn't to go back to the Stone Ages and everybody run around naked and smoke weed, but rather, you know, live a happy, functional life, go through your spiritual aspirations. You could, you know, study science, why not, even travel, why not, and engage in all those practices that we do today. But the core value of it will shift in the respect that people aren't interested in having a big name or you know, five cars and a huge mansion.
Right.
So that's where it really differs.
Yeah, I understand that. That's good for people to understand too. Now, will you have places on this property where people can live permanently?
Yes, there will be actually some bungalows because of course we'll need to house staff. So there will be some bungalows which will be assigned for permanent residents.
Mm-hmm. So you'll have a section that's for permanent residents, and some areas that'll be for those that just want to come and experience what you have to offer.
Exactly, and that's the beauty of it. You know, you don't need to be part of the community if you just want to come in and out, if you're a local, or if you just want to visit it and experience it, you know, experience just the land, because the land is absolutely gorgeous. Like I said, if you go on the website and you go under gallery, you can see some of the images of the land. You know, just come out there for a day and relax and do your own thing, walk around, or if you want to join the meditation circle, if you want to experience the pyramid that we have on site. And that's what's really unique about this, is that you're not obligated to be part of it to enjoy an experience.
Mm-hmm. One thing, another thing I thought about just now, just passed through my head here, is, you know, one thing that's happening in Egypt, what's going on right now, all this craziness and stuff. Now, you're finding in neighborhoods that Christians and Muslims and everybody are working together to protect their neighborhoods right now. And when if somebody comes to your center, it doesn't matter what religious belief they are.
Absolutely. It doesn't matter at all, because one thing that I've realized, you know, I associate with a lot of scholars that are kind of in the field for a very long time, and of course I have 10 years of my own research backing me in terms of, you know, I've studied a lot of, I mean, everything. I've studied a lot of traditional Kabbalah, occult Kabbalah. I mean, I've studied morals and dogma, which is heavily Freemasonic. I've studied traditional, conventional history. And one thing that you realize is that is when you study any of these religions, you come to a couple conclusions. First of all, most of it, most of the major religions are allegories. Most of it is actually, a lot of it is astrology worship or even energy worship, positive effect. So, you know, in order to, you know, when you discriminate on the basis of credo or belief, it kind of, it just shows a lack of understanding what the faiths are trying to preach to begin. So, of course, if somebody comes from this background, or they're atheists even, or they're this, or they're scientists, or of any background, then, you know, absolutely everybody can come in and join, and that's the point, is for people to discuss the differences and where ultimately, it all kind of syncs up and really is the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. What one thing would is that you would like to tell people about your center? When will it be open? How can they help build the center, help you and what you're doing?
Well, like I said, I've been in the process 5 years now. I've put about 200,000 of my own into it over those five years that I've been developing it. I'm always looking for helping hands. If anybody wants to come up and help me out physically, or if they want to, you know, pitch ideas for marketing and advertising, expedite the process. One thing that I am and I have been seeking for a while is somebody who would be interested in a grant writing or fundraising ideas and strategies. Because like I said, you know, I've spoken to this idea with many people that I know, and I can do it myself in terms of financing it, but it's just going to take a lot longer.
Uh-huh.
And somebody out there wants to help out, donate, or even help out with fundraising strategies or ideas to expedite that process, that would be great, because I could be up and running by the end of the year.
Well, I know you, and you know a lot of people out there, Jordan Maxwell and people of this nature and everything, that would probably come and help you, you know, as being part of the people, making people aware of what is going on out there right now. And I think it's very important that you have these connections. When I was a conspiracy con down there, I mean, there's a ton of people that really wanted something like this to happen, especially in the society that's happening right now.
Exactly. You know, and that's what I want to offer, because I am around a lot of people. I think so many people attack, you know, the political situation or economic situation or, you know, whatever you want to call it. There's so many problems to begin with, and that's fine, because I think the first remedy to the problem would be to identify what it is exactly, to quarantine it off. But then afterwards, you know, trying to collect, you know, you get a lot of these constitutionalists, and I think it's good. You know, I used to go to the John Birch Society meetings a lot, and you know, one thing that I always used to argue with them, and I wasn't trying to be a pessimist, but you know, they obviously advocate the Constitution, and I told them, and I'm like, your ideas are good, your intentions are good, but the Constitution essentially failed. How do we know? Because bankers rule the world. You know, I mean, and Jefferson warned about this. You know, everybody warned about it. Abraham Lincoln warned about it. You know, JFK tried to eradicate the private reserve.
Yeah.
And, you know, so what I'm trying to say, I'm not trying to be a pessimist, but I think that we should recognize that the old system failed. It did. That's why we are in the situation we are today, but that's okay. So what are we going to do about it? And the conclusion that I think you, even when you study the cycles of history, how societies and cultures generally evolve and how they develop, then, you know, an internal spiritual revolution is what's to come next, whether you want it or not, because no matter how many band-aids you put over this situation, it still is what it is, which is the beast. You know, it's this Leviathan, it's capitalism, and you can do whatever you want with it, but at the end of the day, you know, it's basically perpetual slavery. That's all it is.
Yeah, I agree in a big way right here, what you're talking about and everything. I agree with the original Constitution, what it meant, what they were trying to do with it and everything, but the political powers that be has really taken it and misconstrued it and tried to interpret it and everything else. Definitely understand that 1,000% there. I mean, that's part of what our radio show's about, is trying to get things straightened out. One thing you mentioned there about the spiritual awareness, I think that's happening big time. in this country and America, especially right now. We're starting to re-look at values of what
right.
is going on out there, and I think that is a very important thing to touch on.
Well, I think if we get back to the Constitution as it was originally intended, then we can do it, but we have allowed these big bankers, which we have been warned about
yeah.
over and time again,
yeah,
we've been warned to not let, don't let them take over, don't let them take over, but we did. It was written on our Constitution, so if we go back to the Constitution, I think we'll be okay. It's getting back there is going to be the problem, and yes, it's a non-violent revolution. They want a violent revolution. They
oh, yeah.
want us to
oh,
stand
yeah.
up, then they can just shoot us or lock us up.
Yep.
It's no good. We need to just get back involved in the politics, and we need to just take our cities back, and then the states, and then the federal government can go back to number three where they belong.
And I think that's what Nate is bringing up is very true and everything. But I think what your society, what you're trying to create here, will take us back into that type of understanding of what the original thing, Constitution,
right.
what
and
this country
exactly
is founded
because,
on.
I mean, you know, if you remember even Jefferson, he advocated these type of agrarian societies, these very small communities.
Yes,
I mean, Jefferson
sir.
Advocated that. And one of the theories behind it was that if you get a society of a couple hundred people to 1,000 people at most, and everybody knows everybody, there's a lot of strength in it.
Yes.
So meaning that if something, some kind of injustice comes from outside, or let's say, let's use the modern example where martial law tries to impose it on these communities, it's going to be very difficult for any type of federalized government to pull that off, especially, you know, when 1,000 people are standing strong together as one unit, as one family, as opposed to what we have here in L.A., you know, most of there's 10 or 15 million people within a 10-mile radius.
Yeah.
Everybody hates everybody. You know, everybody's afraid of everybody. The neighbors don't talk to each other. There's a sense of animosity, and so you can get 300 cops to take over this entire city.
Yeah,
you know,
one thing you mentioned there is very true. You know, nobody knows their neighbors nowadays in the cities and everything.
Right.
You know, 15
right.
million people, and most people don't even know who their next-door neighbor is in a lot of
right.
cases, you know. And it's really time for our local communities to get back together and create basically what you are doing. I think it's possible that some of the townships and everything we have now could really go into and use some of the ideas you have here and what you're creating to make themselves better.
Yeah, it's also sad because they are producing this. They want us. They're ripping at us in every which way. Race, if it's your
yeah,
football
yeah.
team, if it's your class, your wealth. Every which way they want us divided, and that's how they are conquering us. And, you know, united we stand. I mean, they don't say it for a reason.
And divided we fall.
And they understand that, and that's what they do.
That's right.
And, yeah, and that is exactly how they do it. You know, and that's one of the objectives and reasons, I think, that a community only to that extent where people know each other personally is a real prize and a solution to this problem. Because once you get these massive metropolises, which, again, is a byproduct of capitalism, as we've said, then, you know, animosity is just a natural byproduct. Then people start competing. There's a lot of envy. There's a lot of jealousy.
Yeah.
And then there's animosity. Of course. And, you know, finally there's animosity where the neighbors don't know each other. And then, you know, and it just, it becomes a bad situation. You're involved with, you know, millions of people. Nobody knows anybody, which is, of course, bad for your spirit because you're kind of in this, you know, you feel like an android almost. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, one thing I've been looking at our chat here as we're talking and everything, and one chat individual said, well, you know, as long as these people are comfortable, they're not going to change the way the country is and everything. But I, you know, I look at that, and that's very true, and something has to really happen and slap them in the face, and I think that's happening globally right now.
And it will. It will
right.
slap
Absolutely.
Them in the face.
And I've got that many times where people, you know, because that is true. If people are comfortable, what's the purpose of changing? And I guess you could either say fortunately or unfortunately, depending on where you look. The situation, I think, and I'm not trying to be a pessimist, but it's just a natural byproduct. It's just going to get progressively worse because
sure.
if you understand how the banking works, just in the simple respect that you owe 7% on every dollar that's printed,
mm-hmm.
mathematically, that's just going to be a cataclysm eventually. And you can do all the recessions that you want. You can do all the debt nullification that you want. Eventually, that's going to culminate to hyperinflation, which is, again,
that's right.
what Lincoln Jefferson had talked about. So what's going to happen? This comfort isn't going to really exist. This abomination that we've had of the middle class, that was inevitable. That had to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Because what's happening is, you know, how can everybody expect to have two cars and a house or even own a house, you know, but let's say even own a house when essentially the wages always disproportionately grow, you know, and a good example of this is, you know, let's say in the 1960s where the average person made, I don't know, $15,000 a year, but the houses cost you know, a 30,000. So it's basically a 1-to-2 ratio. But now we fast forward to today, and the average person makes $60,000-$70,000 if they're lucky, $80,000 if they're lucky, and the average house key in LA costs $500,000. You see, it's just not proportional anymore.
Right. Mm-hmm. Very true.
So, you know, in terms of your the initial question, if people are comfortable, well, they're only going to be comfortable for a little bit longer, but I think this complete elimination of the middle class, and you're essentially just going to have wealthy people and then poor people, which is what it's kind of turning into, is going to be a harder push. So, you know, eventually it's going to come to you, and they've even said this. This has even been quoted in the Bible, but even a lot of philosophers said this, that, you know, what's going to happen is eventually people are going to work an entire day's wage just to maintain their sustenance. We're not talking about luxury or anything.
I think a lot of people are at that point right now.
Well, food prices are already going up. I was looking at, corn's gone up 90% since June.
Yeah.
I mean, food prices are just shooting through the roof, and that's what it's going to be. There's going to be food in the stores. They're not going to be able to afford it.
You know.
And I think it's going to take people to get slapped in the face, and these millionaires, even 100 millionaires, these guys are going to get hit too. And unfortunately, they're going to be used until it's too late, when they could be on our side right now helping us, because they're not going to be included in these billionaires' plans. And so if they're not going to step up, and unfortunately, even these guys that are comfortable are going to have to get uncomfortable until they finally see it, and that's just unfortunate. But,
well, you know, one thing that Nate touched on, and you touched on here too, Nate's right here. I understand that, and you are too. One thing about your center here that you're talking about and everything, but let's talk about food, you know, the prices of food going up and everything. What would your center do? I know you'd get into holistic growing food and everything like that, but is it possible to turn around and have a situation such as you and produce all of its own food? I believe that it is possible.
Well, it is, absolutely, and that's one of the things I was going to do up there that I'm actually in the process of working is to have your own agriculture. Why not? Because if you understand how food processing works, you know, 70-80% of most food that you buy in the store today is actually a byproduct of corn or directly related to corn. So, you know, I think you would just need to produce a couple of main ingredients like milk, so you can produce, of course, your cheeses and your yogurts, and then you'd have various fruits. Of course, you'd have chicken, so you could have either the meat or the egg if you were, you know, there's some vegetarians, but if you needed that necessity, it exists, then grow corn. And all that, it's not difficult. You know, I actually lived in the Czech Republic for a year, and I lived in a small village. It was only about 108 people, and I lived there for a year, and I watched all these people. You know, I knew a beekeeper, that's what he did. And so each member of this commune would each have a specific function. Some could be the garden, some could be the bee man, some could be, you know, the processing food. And so everybody would have a specific function in terms of what they do, but of course it's very viable. You know, it's not even that difficult. I've seen this happen, you know, just 2 years ago when I lived there for a year. I've seen how everybody kind of took care of everybody in the small community.
Yeah, I agree there. As a matter of fact, we do it in our community. If somebody needs help and you got a tractor, you get out there with a tractor, you help them. If you need
exactly.
your roof fixed, I mean, this is a good way to go. But, you know, like Nate said, and I have to agree with him, we've been taught through our media and everything else to turn around. They're pulling us apart. They're trying to destroy the community efforts. They're trying to, you know, pull families apart, pull friends
apart. Spy on each other.
Spy on each other. Yeah, that's very true.
And the key word is that it's been taught, and it could be untaught.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then you got to look, because I believe big cities are the easy way to kind of manipulate a big population at once. And so then you got to look at Agenda 21, making everybody drive into cities. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, what I was going to say is I think the key point is to understand, again, if we take it from a historical standpoint, we have to understand why we are in the situation we are in terms of urbanization and massive metropolis today. Mm-hmm. And basically the reason that was is because in the 1920s and 30s when urbanization happened, meaning when they took the farmers and they kind of put them into cities, because that's when the majority of this movement happened, we call urbanization today.
Yeah.
Then what it was a lot of bankers actually made life in the city a much more viable, much more better, wholesome thing, because they provided people with electricity, which they didn't have generally in rural areas.
Yeah.
They provided them with water. And these were all provided at a very good cost, because that was kind of their base. And so what happened is after a generation or two, now we're fast-forwarding to the 60s, 70s, 80s, they just started exponentially increasing everything, but you're so used to it, you're not going to go back on a farm, because, you know, nobody remembers how to, you know, do this or do that, so it's just easier to kind of be enslaved in the city than it is to be out in the farms. And that was actually, I believe, that that was actually a ploy that was done by the bankers intentionally called urbanization to try to enslave people in the metropolises.
Sounds like a lot what they did at the for the housing market. They made it look the loans look nice and easy, and then all of a sudden they pulled it out, the rugs out from underneath.
And back in the 20s, 30s, and 40s when this movement was happening, it was very easy. Again, don't forget, you know, back when we talk about the 40s, the average person made $8,000, but houses cost $10,000.
Yeah.
So you could almost buy a house in one average wage a year. You know, and could you do that today?
No, you couldn't. No.
That's the point. See, everything was so much more viable. It was very alluring to the average person because, hey, why am I going to dig dirt, you know, in the middle of nowhere? I'm going to dig, you know, work hard for, you know, 6 months just so I could break even when I can go to the city and I you know, I could keep working as an electrician or a plumber, something much more clean for my family, and I have electricity and water. That was a big deal back then.
So
you know, food's provided for me, and housing's very cheap. It's a good deal, but nobody foresaw the fact that they were going to switch it on them in 50 years and everybody basically becomes a perpetual slave, which is what happened.
Yeah, and you know, you're right on that, and that's just a realization right here, you know. They've created these cities so it's easy for people to go in there and take care of their business, you know, food and fresh water and this and that. But what they've taken away from us is the old-fashioned ability to survive, to grow a garden, to grow some chickens and get some fresh eggs and things like that. And this is what your community is teaching people to go back to.
Right, and everybody serves a function. Not everybody has to work. And, that, and you know, if you read Thomas More, he was a philosopher, and I believe the 17th century, he wrote a book called Utopia. It's a very short book. It's a novel, basically. And he says that you know, and it makes perfect sense that if everybody, let's say out of 100 people, if everybody only pitches in 2 hours a day of work, which is nothing, you know, I mean, that's very liberal in today's standards, then the society would have an abundance because most people don't do anything valuable in the society today, and that's why. But, you know, if we had these communities where there's 100 people in there and everybody just spends 2 hours a day doing whatever it is that they do, their function, you know, if they want to build or if they want to work on the electricity or if they want to help maintenance or if they want to grow the agriculture or look for water, more efficient ways to get electricity or water, or the doctors want to help people, you know, basically live healthier lives or whatever function it is that that person has, then it would truly be a utopian society. But the, you know, most people, they just serve the bureaucratic beasts. You know, you got parking enforcement, you got police officers, and for all intent and purposes, they're basically the police enforce the policies of the policymakers in Washington, like Jordan said, that is funded for by the lobbyists of the bankers. So you're really just serving the bankers' interest, and everybody kind of is a perpetual slave, just in varying degrees, of this hierarchical banking system.
You know? You're so right. And, you know, it's funny, it's all the way through this situation here, you're talking about the bankers, you know, and how they've set things in. And here, us here at Sovereign Minds, you know, we see that, we feel that. I mean, you're watching it every single day. And cutting them out of the picture would be a very beneficial thing all the way around for people. And what would you, with the society and everything, let's say all of a sudden our monetary system crashed, what you were talking about seems to be money wouldn't be needed.
Money wouldn't be needed. And again, because the entire organization, that organic body that would be that particular society, would take care of itself. Because why do you need money? Is very efficient for the part. You know, it's a middleman. It's an inefficiency factor. But not, of course, if you're the wealthy person who's allocating the money out and who controls the money, then it's a good thing. But if you're the rest of us who have to work for it and then spend it and work for it and spend it and negotiate prices, it's a very inefficient thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now imagine that there was no money involved. We just scratched the whole idea of money, and basically everybody served a function in that society, and if they expounded their function properly, which would benefit everybody. Let's say you're the agriculture guy. You're the one who plants the seeds and then cuts it in the right season. That's your function, then that would basically make you privy to the privileges of the entire society. You would get to enjoy anything that anybody else did.
Yeah.
And that's the way it should be.
Yeah, I agree there, and I've seen that kind of society. Basically, we're talking back to also going back to what you can barter for something else. And the old societies, and, well, I'm not really that old, you know, I'm only 56, but I remember when you could run to your neighbor and ask for a cup of sugar, you know, and then in turn they'd ask you for a couple eggs, you know, and things like this. So that type of society would be possible.
Right, and, you know, and again, there's so many benefits that aren't readily seen in this type of society, like the almost entirely reduced aspect of stress. You know, stress is, I think, personally, stress is the number one killer in America. I think it's also the cause of cancer and all things. You go to places like northern Pakistan, as you've probably seen this, there's a there's a society. It's called the Hun Dynasty. It's a little culture in North Pakistan.
You're breaking up. You know
what's that?
You're breaking up.
Do you hear me now?
Yeah, very good.
Okay, well, I was saying that there's this small, not a small, it's actually several thousands of people. It's called the Hun Dynasty, and it's in northern Pakistan in the Himalayan Mountains. And essentially, it's kind of like what we're talking about. It's a type of spiritual community. There is really no cars, very few cars. You know, the entire concept of capitalism is almost eradicated because there's no money. It's all basically barter. Mm-hmm. And you know what the average lifespan in that society is?
What's that?
125 years is the average life. That's a fact. You can Google search that.
How about the cancer rate and stuff like that? Do you know much about that with that society?
It doesn't exist. There is no
zero
rate, and that's why I'm actually using it. You can Google search it. It's H-U-N-T-Z. And if it's not that, then it's something similar. There's probably, if that's not exactly the way it's spelled, then you'll see it, you know, at Alaska if you want to search this. And you can actually do research on this. There's no cancer rate in this society, almost disease-free entirely. The people are 6'4", you know, something like that, and they live, the average lifespan is 125 years there.
Yeah, a great researcher named G. Edward Griffin wrote a book about that. Mm-hmm. And he mentioned that tribe and how their zero cancer rate in their diet is high in B17.
Edward G. Griffin, yeah, he is a very good documentarian.
Yeah, have you got to read or see his documentary, A World Without Cancer?
I think I did see that. I know that I saw Jekyll Island. I did see that.
Another good one.
I think one of his best works, and it's not really noticeable in the beginning, but one of his best documentaries, I think, is when he interviews Norman Dodd.
KGB?
D-O-D-D, Norman Dodd, and he was, I guess, he was a former Federal Reserve, or he was a high banker guy, and he actually investigated the initial crash of 1933,
mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I mean, if you guys want to talk about this, very, I think it's interesting, but...
What our show's about. I mean, we can talk,
right.
What's your take on all that?
Edward G. Griffin, he's interviewing Norman Dodd, and Norman Dodd passed away in 1989, and what had happened is, Norman Dodd, he was a very high-ranking bank official, and the crash had happened, then he was stunned because, you know, he comes from this very prestigious school. He's of the fact that he's of the mind, of the opinion, that he knows how banking and economy work, and let alone the crash has happened, so he's thinking in his mind, geez, how did this happen? I thought I knew everything about banking, and this doesn't make sense at all. So he opens up a congressional report in 1944 on the Federal Reserve, actually. He opens up a congressional report to investigate what had happened. And so what he did, one of the chairs at, it was Carnegie Hall, they came up to him in around 1944, and they said, what do you want from us? Why are you investigating us? Because obviously the heat was put on him, so they got a little upset. And he just says, I want to research what happened in 1933. And so the representative of the Carnegie Endowment, they said, well, we'll make you a deal. If we give you our minute reports to our corporation, which all the, you know, every meeting that ever happens is in the minute report, will you just close the investigation off and just leave it be? So Norman Dodd agrees to it, and what he did, and he discovered this, because I guess the founding of one of the representatives of the Carnegie Endowment didn't know what actually took place in 1909 in the meetings between the Carnegie Endowment and, I think it was, the Rockefeller Foundation. And an interesting conversation had actually happened, which was reported in the minute reports, which Norman Dodd had discovered. And the conversation was basically to the extent that they asked, what is the best way to control or alter cultures? That was the question that was proposed in this meeting. And one of the guys answered, war. That's the best way we know how to alter culture.
In the quickest. Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
It was actually discovered that what they did is they created World War One. Whoever they are,
it's an elite.
It's
an elite, you know, the elite up there, the ones that run the banks and everything, pretty much.
Exactly. It is an elite. The only names that were given there is as representatives of the Carnegie Endowment and the Rockefeller Foundation, and who else was involved is kind of a mystery, but it actually shows there's proof in there, according to the Carnegie Endowment Minute Report, that there was a conversation, and then World War One happens, World War Two happens, and then what happens is today what we know as the American Historical Society is an offshoot or subsidiary to the Carnegie Endowment, And they admitted this, that they teach history the way they want to teach it. They don't lie. They just tell you what they want to tell you in order to justify and further perpetuate further wars. And that was actually admitted. And so what happens is, I guess Norman Dodd's paralegal, she literally went insane because it's, you know, she's reading these books and they're admitting it. What we're going to do is we're going to alter the way history is taught. We're going to tell people only what we want to tell so we can alter cultures through war. That's what they say.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes perfect sense because when we say we go into Iraq, what is the, you know, we go into Afghanistan or we do this or we do that, what is? Because we want to instill democracy. We want to westernize it. We want to alter the culture. That's the objective, right?
Right.
So,
I guess.
So I mean, you know, if eradicating this entire, I guess if you want to call it a Leviathan, this beast, you know, you can't, and that this is one of the reasons why I think the Constitution is good. I think it's the best system that exists for a major society, but obviously it doesn't work anymore because the Federal Reserve does rule the world. That's a fact.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, yeah.
You know, I think you have to obviate the beast entirely, which means that you have to eradicate that entire system of money, of currency, of whatever it is that they allocate out, because if you don't, then you're basically, you know, you're not curing the cancer. You're just basically putting it into recession, but it's still there.
Right. I understand that 100%. And we have to agree with you here that the Federal Reserve is pretty much running. But look at the Reserve Bank of India. Look what's happening over there. I mean, the food shortage is everywhere. But, you know, back on what you're trying to create here is teaching people, basically, that they can disconnect from this matrix of deception and lies.
Right, and that's it, you know. And so the question comes up, what is the solution? We have all these problems, that's fine in itself, but what is the solution? And the solution, I believe, is an internal spiritual revolution for people to recognize that there's so much more than you know, not just a number, but a race, but a stereotype, but a person who has a job, occupation, that they're either a plumber or a computer IT or any of this nonsense, to recognize that higher inner worth of themselves, because I'm convinced, because it happened to me, that when you do have even that minor spark of inspiration within yourself, then you see the triviality of the world. And if you see that basically it's all kind of, it's a hoax, first of all, but if you see that you're basically puppets in a show, but you have something to fall back on, which would be the spirituality, then the transformation will happen that much easier.
Well, I agree with you. I think spirituality is the key here. Because once people wake up, what is going on inside of them, they can literally look around and see all these deceptions and all these lies and all this major media attack on your senses and your way of life and everything. Right. Once you can step back from that, then and only then, can you really start to see what's going on? You see this matrix start to crumble.
Right. And you know, and I think the first thing, and like one of your guests even said with the text, you know, why would people change if they're comfortable? And I agree with them. Most people won't. But that's okay, because what's going to happen in the next 10 to 15, 20 years is you're not going to have that. Or most people don't have it now, but it's only going to get categorically and exponentially worse. So the question is do you want to get ready for it, or do you want to pretend like it's not happening and then end up in the streets in 5 years, you know?
Right.
And so I think that's where, you know, it's going to happen whether you want it or not. That's, you know, if you want to say the fall of the way we live today.
I think people are tired of the way we're living today. I mean, it's really evidence in the news and everything that's going on in the world. I really see this as a global spiritual and mental revolution. And people really knowing what's going on.
Yeah, also,
and that's exactly it. Most people are tired, and you know, they have to have something in place, because, you know, if you have nothing better, it's better, you know, just like there was an old adage, it's, you know, for a wife it's better to stay under a roof or a husband beats her than to go out on the street. But if there's a guy who's willing to take care of her, then she's going to go there. And you got to offer people something which is genuinely and wholesomely better. And that's what I'm doing over at the Pyramid Center is all about.
Mm-hmm. Right, and that sounds like a great idea, and I definitely would like to come down and visit sometimes. Also, we have societies here, they're feeding our kids full of pills, and these pills are just changing the molecular structure of their brain, and and when these kids aren't going to have these pills, they're going to freak out. So, I mean, they're getting I just realized this today because something terrible happened last night. I won't mention it, but and it has to do with pills and crap, and So they're, to me, I just realized that they're just getting our country full of the everybody on these different pills, and then they're going to just cut them off.
They're making them dumb.
And then what happens? We're going to have just anarchy in the street. These kids just crazy off no pills, you know? I mean, that could just very well be true. I mean, so I don't
know.
Well,
you know, and that is an unfortunate aspect of modern society, as there are many, you know. I mean, pills are one of them. And, you know, and it's, you know, my the teachers, and it's because people are ignorant and they don't realize what they're doing. And let me give you an example of my own situation. I fortunately never took any of the, you know, Ritalin or any of that stuff that the kids are taking today. But I remember that the teachers tried to impose that on me, and my dad just said, no way. You know, he got very upset because it's just, you know, kids are supposed to be hyper. Why are you giving them drugs?
Right. Go play soccer.
Yeah.
Right, and so, you know, again, there is a lot of unfortunate aspects of modern society, which this over-medication is one of them, or even medicating children is one of them.
Yeah, I agree.
Television is, you know, a lot of people don't realize how bad television hypnotizes, you know, and let me just bring up a quick example about this. I read a book, people can get it out there, it's called The Four Arguments for the Elimination of Television, and it was written by an author named Jerry Mann. And one point that I found absolutely phenomenal, and the whole book was really good, but one point that I even repeat to people nowadays is that in the book, he makes the point that you actually, most people's experiences today, guys and girls, that are under the age of 30 or 30 or even under the age of 40, actually get it through television, which I thought was profound.
Yeah, that's very true.
I've traveled all over Europe, and when you talk to women, for example, in Europe, they're not scared of guys. Like, they'll talk to you normally. You can approach them. You can talk to them. You know, you can sit down at a coffee shop or here generally, or at least in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
Women are very frightened of men because they think everybody's a child molester or they're some kind of a rapist or they're, you know, there's some kind of an aggressive drug dealer or whatever.
Right. You got a really good point there. Joe, we only got about 2 minutes left here, and we want to touch base on your center and everything. We appreciate what you're saying. What specifically would you like to say about your center and what can be done here? You got about a minute to do that.
Okay, well, again, you know, I'm doing what we've been talking about the entire hour. If anybody wants to help me out, I'm more than willing, you know, for ideas, opinions. If anybody wants to come up physically and help me out, that's great. I go up there about twice a week. My primary thing is if anybody wants to donate or help, raise funds for the center, or even have fundraising ideas or strategies, please contact me on the website. Again, thepyramidcenter.org, and I'm open, you know, and I'm going to keep on keeping on. I'm putting my own money, I'm putting my own energy. This is where I'm going with everything, and I'm going it regardless of what's going to happen. But if anybody wants to stand by, embrace the idea, help out any way you can, I'm more than open.
Oh, sounds really good. And, you know, Joe, we're really glad that you came on the show. We're definitely going to have you back on the show again in the future here. I mean, it's really nice to have somebody that is really looking for a fix, and that's what we try to do here at Sovereign Minds. Not only do we present a problem, but we try to fix a problem too. And with that said, thanks for being on the show and everything. And I'll give you a call tomorrow. We can touch base on more. Thank you very much.
Thanks Wycro.
Okay.
See you guys later.
You guys, take it easy. And okay, with that said, now we want to touch base one more time on all those people that sponsored us and everything. Advanced Soil Stabilization, using Technisoil for dust control on roads, driveways, and parking lots. Also, they install Crestone driveways. And call Todd Sykes for more information at 530-549-4801. They have Advanced Soil is green friendly as well.
And tune in next week because we have Lindsey Williams, Pastor
yes.
Lindsey Williams, coming back on. I just talked to him today. He's on, he's booked, and he's got some new information for us. So make sure you tune in at 8 o'clock.
Something you don't want to miss. This is Sovereign Minds, opening one mind at a time.